This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Hello everyone, this is Clint Locklear for Trapping Across America. Getting ready to do an interview that I think is going to be highly fun and probably very educational. I'm up in New York at the New York State Convention. It's pretty early in the morning, and we're sitting around in my Chester Molester van the way it looks, and we're going to talk about trapping. So where are you from, man, and who are you?
Well, I'm Terry Schwartz, my nickname Swamper, and I live in a little up on a mountain behind a little town called Blaine, Pennsylvania, and that's where I reside at for the time being.
Now, yesterday when we were just talking a little bit, I didn't realize you were from Tennessee. How did you end up in Pennsylvania?
Well, my father was a nomad Indian. And he never, ever knew what was down this next stream or up the next holla. And he was never happy. We lived a little here and a little there. He always wanted to keep moving on to find what was ahead of him. And I was born in Memphis, Tennessee. And we finally ended up in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. That was the first place we resided. And my mother said, this boy's going to have to go to school. So that's where we stopped.
That's a good enough reason to put roots down as anything, I guess.
Well, that, and if I'm really honest about it, I think the old man was always about 10 feet ahead of the IRS. So.
I have to say, I'd like to meet him. So, how did you get into trapping? Who got you into it and why?
My mother got a divorce, and she married this young man, and I was about 6 years old, I guess. And we moved. His mother died, and his father got sick, and we moved there to help him. And that was in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. And that's right near State College, about 18 miles from State College. And there was a game warden there by the name of Mike Grabney. And he used to take all us kids around the countryside there and try to teach us the right ways of hunting, trapping, and fishing, and so forth. And he raised fish, trout. That was his hobby, from eggs on. And in them days, he didn't want the kingfisher eating his little minis, so he hired me and paid me 50 cents for every kingfisher that I took out of the traps that we had on poles. And that's how I got started trapping.
Now, from what you just said, I mean, you look about 22, 23, but if the game warden was having you set traps on top of poles for birds, how young are you?
Well, I'm pushing hard on 70.
70. So you've been around doing this a long time.
Yeah, I've done this since I was about 8 years old, I guess.
Well, my wife asked me last night, she said, are you going to do an interview in the morning? And I'm like, yep. And I said, I'm doing it with Swamper. She goes, who? I said, I don't know where this thing's going to go, but I said, I think he's calming down a little bit in his older age because I finally seen him with a shirt on.
Well, I'm not much on heat.
Well, that's probably why you didn't stay in Memphis. That's a hot place.
Yeah. I can't take that southern heat.
So what did you, when you, okay, besides that doing with the trout, what did you start into trapping after that as far as fur bears? Was it the game warden that kind of led you in that direction too?
He taught me at that time, the Pennsylvania Game Commission had a book on trapping, and it was 25 cents. And it was written by Paul Failer that worked for the Pennsylvania Game Commission. And I scraped up enough money for a quarter, and then I found out that weasels was worth $1 bounty, horned owls was worth $5 bounty, and of course we trapped foxes and got $4 bounty. So Mike Grabney made me a weasel box and put some bloody deer lungs in it, and I caught my first white weasel, and we went from there. I just kept on graduating.
Now, when you say scrape up a quarter, is that being hyperbole or real? Because that's hard to imagine for a younger guy to gather right now.
My stepfather had a 32-acre rock patch. And he growed everything that we could grow, and we canned and froze and had root cellars, and we never had any money, but we had food.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember at one point in time, Remington brought out a little box of shells called Rockets, and it was an 18-pack because we couldn't afford a whole box of 22 shells. And we would buy them when we gathered up nickel pop bottles and whatever else we could do to get those enough money to buy a box of shells or part of a box of shells. And even at the, and when you went to the hardware store, they'd go in there and say, need some 12-gauge shells. And he said, how many do you want? Do you want part of a box? Because we didn't have any money. And they'd sell them to us, you know, two or three shells, so us kids could go hunting. And that's just the way it was. We didn't have any money.
Was that pretty common in the area at the time, or was that just...
When the coal mines played out, what happened was everybody left because there was nothing, you know, there's no industry where we were at, so there wasn't you either had to be a carpenter or a farmer or a logger. When the mines played out, everybody moved. So they even shut down schools, and when you shut down a school, that should tell you that there's no kids going to school, so they're leaving.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Before we get back to trapping, I'm just curious because I've talked to several guys that's got some years on me about that time. Do you think, you know, monetarily it's so much different now, but do you think that you had a better growing up than kids do today, even though they have money and nice clothes and cars when they're 16?
Yes. I never owned a bicycle until I was 50 years old. I bought it at a yard sale just for exercise. But I had a great life. We canned, and it was a team. If you did not say in front of our parents, that's a girl's job or that's a boy's job, it's everybody's job. All us kids knew how to iron, sew, wash clothes, can, cook. And then it was a union of people.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. Did you ever meet Red Edgman? He wasn't much in the NTA, but he was in the FTA.
Yes, I knew Red.
And when I got back from Alaska, I pestered him to let me go mink trapping with him. And I drove all the way up to his house, and we just got to talking a little bit. And I wish I was doing this then because his stories were hilarious, but they were very interesting. And he was saying when he grew up, he got like six, like number one long springs or one and a half long springs or something. That's all he had. And he wanted to set those traps so bad that he'd have to miss some chores to go set the traps. So he'd go out and set these traps, and knowing about every week or so he's going to get a spanking or beating, as he called it, over that because he forgot his traps. Or he's running his traps instead of doing his chores. And he said this went on all winter. But he caught something like three mink and so many skunks and this, that, and the other. And when they went to sell the fur, it was more than his dad made farming for the whole year. And then his dad went and bought him more traps, and that was his chores during wintertime, was just trapping. And to me, it's hard for me to grasp a reality like that. They're catching, you know, because now with numbers, the way people catch them, it doesn't mean that much. But back then, it seemed to really, really make a difference.
Well, the first three traps I ever owned, an old timer gave me a 215 Triumph high grip. I found a 115 high grip in a groundhog hole that somebody had left there. And I bought one trap at a hardware store. And when we were kids, we'd go in there. We didn't get to town much, but when we got to town, I'd go in there and I'd drool over those traps hanging there on the walls. And I still have the first trap I ever bought, and the reason I know I have it is because the pan broke off of it, and the bus driver had a mechanic shop, and he brazed the pan on, but the V's upside down, so I know the trap. But in them days, the V didn't mean anything to us other than Victor. But, I have thousands of traps now, and it's the same way with 22 ammunition. I got thousands of rounds because I remember the days that I didn't. So, but it's a great thing. It really is. But
then did you just in the wintertime? I mean, if they closed your school, were you just trapping? Did you go to school all the way through, or
I quit
school?
I quit school in the ninth grade because I hated it. and I did everything I could do, including putting skunk in the heater of the school so that they had to throw us out of school because nobody could stand it. I sort of got a whooping over that from the principal, and then I got home and I got another whooping over that. But they closed the school for a day or two. Nobody could prove it was me, but I still got the whoopings out of it. But we ended up getting a couple days off to go trapping.
So how did you learn how to trap? I mean, was it that 25-cent book?
That's what I started with. And the next book that I bought after I sold some fur to C.O. Lippard, he lived near me. I bought that book, Trapping North American Fur Bearers by Hallbaker. And I read that, and even my book reports in school was on trapping because I loved to read trapping books, and it was just an easy book report. And a lot of time and errors, you know.
So you didn't have a mentor of some kind that...
No.
And well, one thing from your generation from doing these interviews that I've noticed as a commonality is they would run across another trapper. They wouldn't touch the trap, but they'd sit there and study everything about it. Did that ever happen to you?
In the day I can... Today, if you can't trap, you're illiterate because you can't program your VCR or your DVD or read a book. I remember when I first started trapping and you'd say to a guy, oh, you're a fox trapper. Yep. That was you. You just got your conversation and your answer all at the same time. Yep. And the same way with these guys that would catch 10 or 15 mink, and that was, you know, unheard of. And you got your same answer. Yep.
Why do you think, I mean, it's vastly different now.
Oh, yes.
You're probably just shell-shocked when you see all the information. Why do you think it was so different then than now?
Well, you know, you were talking about Red selling that stuff. And if you think about it, you know, at one point after the 20s there, skunks was, I mean, I wasn't around in that era, but if you read the old fur reports, they were $5 and $6. Well, if you got six skunks a night, five sixes is 30, you made a $30 bill, and that was like a month's paycheck, you know, back in that era. And I remember when gas was 9 and 10 cents a gallon, you know, that it's now it's just unreal to pay the money we're paying for gas. But when you got a $5 skunk, that 9 cents a gallon wasn't very much for gas. Mm-hmm. You made yourself some money.
So that's kind of like ginseng hunters are now. They'll tell you you're a ginseng hunter, but just ask them kind of like where they go, and it's just...
In the woods.
Yeah.
Same way with mushrooms. I get my mushrooms in the woods.
So when did you start... when did you start getting where it was a bigger volume and stuff? Because I know you went out of state a lot, and you've been going to Arkansas and probably other places, and I mean, you've been around this for so long. So, I mean, when did that start getting from child trapping to a little more serious?
Well, when the $4 bounty getting into fox trapping, and in the state of Pennsylvania, you were paid $4, and they slit the noses on them because they only have one nose, so they slit the nose so you couldn't turn it in twice. But by slitting the nose, you could still save the fur if you wanted it. And in that era, you know, I was probably about 10 years old, maybe 11 years old, and I was trapping foxes for the bounty, you know, for the money, that $4.
And then, was that year round, or was that just during the season?
No, you could trap year round, and of course I did. And I caught probably the prettiest red fox, cherry red fox, I ever caught in my entire life. I took it to C.O. Lippard, and he looked at it, and he said, Terry, he said, that's a gorgeous fox. He said, I see you've already got the bounty money out of it. And he said, I'll give you a dollar and a quarter if you take it home, or I'll give you a dollar if you let it here. And needless to say, I took my dollar and a quarter and my Red Fox and went home. But it was just that way. I mean, there was no market for that stuff in them days, you know. I mean, to amount to anything. Look at our coon today. What we need is somebody to come up with a, I don't care if it's making teddy bears, something for a coon market. Because mm-hmm. there's millions of them, and just look at what happened last year. You know, they're everywhere.
Now, for someone that's been in it as long as you, I mean, you rode the original fur boom, as everybody calls it.
Yes.
And it...
50 pounds lighter in them days.
50 pounds lighter? When you look at the fur market now, what do you see that's different since you've been looking at it for so long?
Well, one of the biggest thing is the economy. I mean, the other countries, you know, look at, I mean, you don't even have to know anything about it. Look at your world news, Germany, Russia, you know, and look right what's going on right now. You know, there could be another war starting right outside of these countries, and you have to have a place to sell that fur after you get that fur. And we don't have that. We don't have a market. That's our biggest problem.
That's interesting. So when did you start going out of state, Swamper?
It was the late 60s. There was a gentleman that trapped for... there was a member of the NTA. And his name was Earl Renshaw. And I think there is a scholarship fund or something that he started, if I remember correctly. I don't know if they still carry it, but it was in the late 60s. He told me that there was a beaver behind every tree in the state of Alabama, and they all had their own trees. And I trapped in Pennsylvania, and when it would get cold, I thought, you know, I'm going to try this. And I went to Alabama and started trapping beaver, and I worked for Frank Wren, which was the head of the forestry department, and I even worked for George Wallace. I have always campaign buttons. And I graduated from there. I trapped for Tennessee Wildlife in 79, and I started trapping for, in 1980, I started trapping for the Army Corps of Engineers in Arkansas, and I've sort of been with them. I do freelance a little bit down there for some people, but I'm still with the Corps of Engineers.
And what are some of the lessons or memories you have from going out of state? Because there's a lot, you know, with the way emails and stuff are now, I get a lot of questions, and people want to go out of state, but they're hesitant. You know, it's like there's no roadmap, there's no guarantees, there's no, you know, and it's kind of scary to some people.
I can understand that. The first thing you want to do is get a hold of what state you want to go to. And when you get a hold of them people, you write them. You do not use a telephone. And most people have a nuisance control. Most states have a nuisance control person where they can say, all right, we have a beaver problem down here, damage, beaver damage. And they'll put you on to that person, and you talk to that person, and then he'll say, well, I know different farmers that have different problems. And that's where you go. I mean, if you show up in Alabama and you want to trap red fox and bobcats, and all them farmers says, we don't have a red fox and bobcat problem, we got beaver problems.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your key word to get into to there to work, and that's, you know, telling them that you're a beaver trapper. And the very first thing after that you want to do is write and find out if they honor your handgun permit. You do this in writing, because if you do it on the phone and you go down there and they don't honor your handgun permit, and you say, well, Rose told me that worked for your game commission. Well, Rose is no longer employed with us, and we don't know where you got that information, but it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep from getting yourself in a lot of trouble, you know, once you get the state that you want to go to, you find out the game commission, you get the laws and so forth. And they usually have a nuisance control person. And then you talk to them, and then you get your farmer's names. And then you call your farmers or whoever, your ranchers or whatever it might be. And if they really have a problem, they'll get you a house to live in, and they'll pay them electric bills and whatever. The days of sleeping in hotel Chevrolet, chicken coops, school buses, shacks, I've graduated from that. I'm done with that. A guy needed me in Wyoming to trap coyotes for him. And when we were done talking, he had no place for me to stay. And I said, well, apparently you don't have a coyote problem. Because if you got a problem, there's a house trailer somewhere. You know, it's nice when you come in, you want a hot shower and, you know, supper. I've always said they invented the crock pot for trappers. You know, no back talk for Miss Crockpot. If you're smart enough to plug her in and turn her on, you're in good shape when you get back.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, is there any personal experience with the gun permit thing? Or I have a feeling there's a story behind that, man.
There is a story behind that.
One you don't want to go into?
I can go into it. I'll even keep it clean. There was a gentleman in BB, Arkansas. There was a little bar, and I'd stop in for a beer and a sandwich when I was done trapping, and I just bought a new truck, and the lady that was with me when we were trapping, she was my number one beaver skinner, and it's tough when you lose a great beaver skinner. But anyhow, this was the time of Claude Dallas. Of course, I was 100 pounds heavier than Claude Dallas and probably a foot taller than him. But this guy scratched an F in the side of my truck. And the next day, he scratched a U in the side of my truck. And I went down to him, and he had a ball cap on. It says, keep the South clean, send the Yankee home in the bus. And I said, young man, I'm going to tell you right to your face, if a C shows up the side of my truck tomorrow, I'm going to break both of your legs. And I mean it. And he said, I didn't. I said, I don't care. If the C shows up in the side of my truck, you're in trouble. Well, needless to say, the C didn't show up, but he called the police and told them that Claude Dallas was stopping in for a beer and a sandwich.
No way!
And there was a nationwide manhunt for Claude Dallas at that particular time. Of course, when I walked out of the bar, I was slapped against the wall, the blue lights come on, and everybody, and this guy kept calling me coy, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And then the guns, you know, they searched all the guns, and they kept me for about 2 hours till they found out all the guns. So now I carry bills of sale and everything with me for my guns that I'm carrying out of state, and permits. So that's why I made such a point of that. And they detained me for about 2 hours and then found out I wasn't Claude Dallas. But he got even, and, of course, needless to say, he didn't scratch on my truck no more.
Did he walk after that?
I didn't do anything to him, but he knew that if it did, that I was going to. And I'm in every word of it.
Now, to you younger guys out there that are new to this, you need to Google Claude Dallas and see. That was pretty serious business at the time.
Yeah, he shot them two game wardens execution style to death. I mean, there was a movie and several books on it, and then the trapper. It was. I mean, and he was a tough, wiry man. I mean, a young fella, and anybody can go across a Utah salt plains with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's survival. That's tough.
Absolutely. When you're out of state. Okay, you're getting, you're making contacts through writing, which to me that's interesting because no one does that anymore.
You're right.
But you're doing it to back up, though. I mean, just to cover your butt.
That's right. That's right. You know, there was another incident in the state of Alabama one time. There used to be a place called Toady Jones's Store. And every Wednesday it looked like Schwartz's Meat Market, because I would get down there and I'd sell beavers and coons and stuff like that. And I did not know this, but this state trooper pulled in there, and I guess he was going in to get a pop or something out of Toady Jones's store. He seen me with that handgun strapped on my side, and he come over there and read me my rights. He was furious. He said, "You're imitating a police officer." And I said, "No." In those days, I didn't have a concealed weapon permit, so you had to have your weapon out where you could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was furious. He said, "I don't ever want to see that on your side again." He said, I said, "What am I supposed to do with it?" He said, "Stick it in your coat. I don't care, but I do not want to see that gun on your side." And he said that I was imitating a police officer, and he was furious. Then I went and got a concealed weapon permit, and I wear a shoulder holster now, but I wear it mainly because it's out of your road and it ain't hanging on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely like, well, for one, I've got the disease of no assitis.
Yeah.
So if I wear a gun on my belt, my bitch is around my ankles.
Well, I told you I was an iron rigger for 20 years, and we used to have to wear bolt bags to carry our bolts into when we were setting steel. And it just hung on you all the time, you know, like a used diaper. After a bit, you know, now that I don't work anymore, I'm retired, I don't have any used diapers hanging on me. So the pistol under the armpit works great.
So after you get your written permission and you go to the farms, what was your standard operating procedure? Was you try to get as many farms as you can, or would you try to just hit some farms and wipe everything out, or what were you trying to do when you went somewhere?
Well, the farmer that was putting me up, I would go to him and say, "Okay, I need to know what you have here." And one particular farmer I'll never forget, I didn't know what he had. He had three catfish ponds, and the beaver had two of them had lodges, and the third catfish pond was bank beaver, and they dug a hole in the bank, and it got high rains and it blowed the pond out, and he lost all his catfish. So that's how I got started with him. But the first day that we showed up there, he had a set of cowboy boots on, and he was taking me out showing me. I thought, well, I'll find out what's going on here. And I said to this gentleman, I said, "Do you have any otter around here?" He said, "No, there ain't any otters here." He said, "You'll never find an otter around here." And he had them cowboy boots just covered with an otter toilet. So I knew what the man knew then. So he started showing me these ponds and stuff, and he said to me, he said, "What do you think, 100, 200? And I said, "Are we talking money?" He said, "No, we're not talking money." He said, "I'm talking beaver." I said, "What do you mean you're talking beaver?" I said, "You got two lodges." I said, 12, 15 beaver here is all you have. He said, "How long did it take you to drive here?" I said, 22 hours. He said, "You drove here 22 hours in the wrong direction." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Don't you see them sticks?" I said, "I see them sticks." He said, "Every beaver's got his own stick. There's a couple hundred sticks there." And I said, "No." I said, "When you're done with a soda can, you have an empty can." I said, "The only time them beaver want them sticks after they eat the bark off of it is either to build a dam or to build a lodge." I said, "You don't have more than 12, 15 beaver here. You only have two lodges." I said, "Look," I said, "I have a book in the truck that other people that want me to talk to me." I said, "I can leave." He said, "No, you're here now. I want you to stay." We stayed, and the next morning he was there before daylight, and I was getting ready to go run traps, and I only had a little bit of light left the first day. I set 8 traps, and then it got dark, and I couldn't see to set any more. Well, the next morning I had 4 beaver and a muskrat, and the muskrat was an accidental catch, you know. And he was right at the bed of the truck. He wanted to know what was going on, and he said to me, he said, "Well, you know a little something." I said, "Okay." Well, in 2 more days, I'd caught 14 beaver there. And I said, "Randy," I said, "I got to leave. I got to go somewhere to trap." I said, "I can't stay here." And he said, "They'll be back. They'll be back. They're coming back." I said, "Randy, them beaver are laying up dead in your freezer. They ain't coming back here." I said, "I kill them." I said, "I don't blow dams up to watch mud fall out of the sky." I said, "I kill them. That's what I do, and that's how you solve your problem." So I went somewhere else and done some trapping and picked up other farms, you know, around that, you know, to relate to your story on it, or your answer on it, or question on it. And I caught one more beaver the last day there, and
so you were spot on your guesstimation.
Yeah, I try to. Well, if you're going to lay around for 2 weeks waiting for more beaver to come back or whatever, that's not going to happen, you know.
Well, I mean, to me, that's a very that's something anybody that goes out of state and deals with people, with all the predator control I've done, I've heard the same thing with coyotes. I rolled into Texas. First time I was in Texas, if you can get this. I drive all the way down there. I'm on a 1,800-acre little high-fence ranch. Never seen a high-fence before in my life. I could see stuff was going under the fence. So it took me about 6 hours to set that fence, and I got like 4 foot holes in before it just was, you know, too dark. I get up the next morning. I wasn't expecting anything because it was probably only about 50 snares and those three traps. You know, I was expecting maybe one or two coyotes. Had 14 coyotes dead in my truck by the time I ran that fence in those few traps. And the rancher almost kicked me off because I didn't know anything about catching coyotes. So in less than 24 hours, I killed 14, but he thought he had thousands on 1,800 acres. And when you go out of state, you've got to understand public relations and the ignorance of the public. And you can't let it get you mad, because it doesn't get you any good to get mad. You got to be a teacher at that point.
When we were in, I told you in 79, I trapped Tennessee. I don't know how it reads now because I haven't been there in years, but it used to have a written permission to trap in Tennessee.
Still does.
And this gentleman, we were staying, and we lived at Mercer, Tennessee. That's south of Jackson. That's where Too Tall Jones was from.
Mm-hmm.
That played for the Cowboys.
I've trapped some of that same ground.
And anyhow, this. We stayed at an old general store there. I don't remember the name of it, but we stayed there. And he had an upstairs attic, and we stayed in that. And it ended up that this guy kept... They'd come in there, and they'd play Rook. These old farmers would play Rook, you know, the card game, in case anybody doesn't know what that is. But they'd play that. And the guy that was with me, a good friend of mine, we trapped together several different places. And this one old farmer kept saying every day, he said, I got foxes everywhere. We were trapping beaver, and at that time otters were protected. I don't know if they still are in Tennessee or not.
Not anymore, no.
But I never seen so many otter tracks in my life at that time. But anyhow, we were trapping beaver, and I said, all right, I said, someday we'll go out and we'll look at your farm and we'll see this fox problem. Well, it snowed, and two or three days later, I said, hey, I got some time. Do you want to run out and look at this? And he said, yeah. He drove us all over the farm, and when he was done, he said, what do you think? I said, you got a real problem. He said, see, I told you I had a lot of foxes out here. I said, you got ghost fox. He said, what's that? I said, that's a fox that walk around this 2-inch snow and not letting tracks, because I ain't seen a track since we've been riding around on your ground. But that is the ignorance of people that, you know, that just like you're saying, and you can't, if you let it get you mad, then you're going to get yourself in trouble. So you can't do that. You know, you have to, you know, and I'm sure you've run into it too. You know, they're just eating me alive. I'm the poorest farmer in the world. They're eating me alive. I don't have anything. I got six tractors that cost $65,000 a piece, and coyotes are just eating them alive. You know? Mm-hmm. And of course, there are places that you, just like you said, you caught 14 coyotes in less than 24 hours. And it's the same way. You know, there are places you go and there's nothing there. And, you know, it's location, location, location.
Now, do you charge? I mean, I'm sure with the Corps engineers and stuff, do you, like when you do this, is it more ADC or more fur? Or is it fur and you just call it ADC to get some more money?
In the state of Arkansas, different counties are set up, and I get $20 for every beaver tail that I catch. They want the tails. You can have 4 foot stack of beaver pelts. If you don't have any tails, you ain't getting any money. And the agreement is I get everything I catch, all the animals, whatever it might be, I get everything. You give me a place to live, you pay the utilities. And I need... I I've been with the Corps so long, I have a fur shed. They have wood cut for me for the wood stove. I have a place to live. They pay the utility bills. And, of course, the Corps, you know, they really take care of me, but they don't have the problems they used to have.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a pretty good deal.
Well, it's better than sleeping in Hotel Chevrolet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the thing, you know, all those stories. I've got a friend right now, which I'm not going to mention his name because I don't want to embarrass him in any way, but when I tell him of the slave shacks and the broke down trucks and, you know, if you don't catch something, you can't literally pay bills and you know, basically just living animal to animal, it seems like. And it's almost like a romantic, you know, from a story point of view, it's you know, what a way to live and, you know, and all that type stuff. And, well, he's kind of going through that right now, and he's like, this ain't as fun as you made it sound out to be. And I'm like, well, I didn't make it sound fun. You just was thinking it was going to be fun. You know, it's pretty crazy when you get into some of that stuff. So what, we got about 10 minutes left. So is beaver kind of like your expertise, I would say?
I learned to trap everything, because it doesn't matter where I went. If I needed to trap something different, I always carry those traps with me to do so. You know, because if I got a farmer that says, hey, I got a problem over here with bobcats eating my fighting chickens, well, I'd go over there and I'd trap some bobcats for him. Some people, you know, will take you to their place and let you trap, and some people won't pay you. I've had several of them not pay me. You know, they've stuck me with the bills and so forth. But you got to just try and do your best. And, of course, the more fur you catch, the more chance you have of making a dollar at it.
Mm-hmm. What, when you're thinking of beaver trapping, if someone was looking to be a better beaver trapper, what advice would you have for them?
Quit.
I didn't say a profitable beaver trapper, a better beaver trapper. I mean, you can't really mean that. You're still doing it now.
Well, I don't know how long I have left to live, so I'm going to enjoy myself and do what I want to do now. And I mean, I've trapped beaver forever, and I have 10 mile of a cattle ranch down there that I drive through, and I trap coyotes and cats for that gentleman. And another place I trap, he has a deer hunting place, and he told me last year, he said, I just bought another 137 acres that goes with my property. And I feed white-tailed deer. I do not feed raccoons.
Right.
So I went in there and took a bunch of traps and set it up. And, you know, of course, naturally where he feeds the corn, the coons come into it. So, you know, it's just like a giant bait station. So why do you want to go somewhere else when you can feed, you know, right there is where you're going to catch the coons. And I caught 163 coons for him last year, and that solved his problem. But it's right against the White River Refuge, so guess what? This year there's probably going to be a whole pile of coons there eating his corn again, feeding for those white-tailed deer. So,
are you using DPs or footholds? Or
I use, every time a new trap comes out in the market, I try to buy a dozen of them, and I try to learn how to use that trap. I use a combination of everything. You know, I carry everything with me, snares, killer traps, DPs, leg traps. I carry a combination of everything, because traps is a part of your trade. It's a tool of your trade. There's no room for junk traps on a trap line. I don't need to tell you that. Because if you know, junk you have forever, and you need a good trap, it needs to do the job. The book that I'm working on writing right now, is called Tricks of My Trade. And Mr. Dobbins and I had talked, and he told me, he said, I think you need to write this book.
Oh, I totally agree.
And, you know, it's just little things that I've learned since I've been doing this that I'm going to pass on. By, I'm going to sell the book, you know, but I'm going to pass it on so that, you know, sometimes a little wee trick can help you out. And it's, if you go with youth, youth is the way to teach. Because an old trapper, he might do it your way for 10 minutes or 2 days or whatever, but he's going to drift right back to what he was doing, you know. But you take a youth, a young child that you're teaching how to trap, they will, you know, if you teach them that method, that's the method they'll use. I had a friend of mine, I'm not going to mention his name, but he was one of your students one time. That is what he told me anyhow. He took lessons to trap coyotes from you. Anyhow, he showed up down there where I'm trapping in Arkansas, and we got to talking about beaver, and I showed him a method on trapping otters because that's what he wanted to catch. And he said, I've been doing this for 22 years, and this is how you do this otter set. And I said, well, you've been doing it wrong for 22 years. So now that I just showed you how it should be done, and it's up to you. You can go back to doing it your way, or you can do it my way.
It's your choice.
That's right. But that's, like I said, some people, you know, you can teach them, and they'll go back to doing it. You know, it's old habits are hard to break, like Hank says.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, to me, that's the playing around with new stuff. I probably do it more than I should, but I'm always... I can't shut my brain off to about what if. And I've got to see, will that work? Then when I find something that works, how can I make it better? Then it just starts down this, like those portable pocket things I've been using. I mean, because I don't trap anything like I did 10 years ago, much less 5 years ago, because I've learned since then.
The industry has changed so much. I mean, just... Every time you turn around, just swivels. Just look at the swivels that we use. Where before, we never used swivels, the ones that the factory sent out. You know, the industry has changed so much, and if you're not going to be on top of your game, you're going to be in the bottom of your game. And you're in the bottom of your game, then you don't have a game. You don't have a game.
I want to finish on that right there. That was awesome, man.
Well, that's fine, but that...
I appreciate it. I really do. See, it wasn't bad.
No, I didn't have any problem. I wasn't worried. I tried to behave myself, you know.
Well, I definitely steered away from some subjects.
Well, I, you know, like I said, I wasn't going to, you know, you got to watch what you say anymore. But no, that's you know, when a new product comes out, if you're not going to try it, you know, when they come out, when Woodstream came out with a soft catch, and they were really in the state of Pennsylvania, they were really talking about no more steel lake traps. I bought 2 dozen of each, and I experimented with them because if they would have passed that bill, I didn't want to wait, you know, the day they passed the bill and then say, well, now I got to learn how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and bought 2 dozen of each, which I have a couple left over, you know. But you get the right place, you get in Texas and they got a cow dog there and you want to trap that place and they say, Smokey, put that bull in the truck, and Smokey puts that bull in the truck. If you hurt Smokey, you're in trouble.
Absolutely.
That's what happened to Milligan. You know, I mean, I like Ray, he's a good guy, but, you know, when he caught that beaver out there and shot it on top of it, you know, instead of going to the farmer and saying, hey, we got a real problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, their check station at that time was... once a week. You've got a beaver with a 44 on his leg, you know, for a week. That's not good. And of course, you know, when you're trapping on a cattle ranch, that's what they do. They raise cows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely have to. Well, I tell you what, man, when you come out of that book, let me know. For one, I'll help spread the word about it with everything.
I've been working on it. I didn't realize it was going to be this hard, but I'm working on it, and with the artwork and the pictures and so forth. And I haven't even touched it this year, to be honest. I haven't even touched it, and I should be. But I am working on it, and it's going to be called Tricks of My Trade. And there's a lot of little simple things in there that you might not even think of or whatever. And it's going to be a different book. It's not going to be, this is the dirt hole, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many ways can you look at a dirt hole?
Do you think we have enough of those out there?
I'm positive we have enough of them. You know, the last Trapper's Rendezvous that I hosted when I was a director for District 8, a lot of the demos was like bee raising, bluebird box building, things like that, you know. And I told the guys, I said, how many ways do you want to look at a dirt hole? You know,
mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Liggett was supposedly brought out this step down dirt hole, And I'm sure some people use it and some people don't use it. But I'm a firm believer of this. And every demonstration I ever put on for any outfit that asked me to do it, I give the biggest secret away right in the beginning of it. Trapping is hard work. Now, if you like football and you want to watch all the highlights of the last Super Bowl games, you can do that. Or you can go trapping all day, come home, take a shower, and still watch the Super Bowl at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to you. But trapping is nothing but hard work. And if you're going to, I don't need to tell you, if you're going to trap and you want to put numbers up, and even fur, you know. When the boom was on, I worked for Johnson's Fur Company. Monday and Tuesday I worked for him. Wednesday I did my fur. I worked for Hip and Steel's Fur Company for Thursday and Friday, and Saturday and Sunday was my days. Along with hauling guts and carcasses, because we could sell them. Hall Baker was buying 5-gallon buckets of carcass or fox guts. All he did was gut them. Just throw them in the bucket. He just wanted the guts, bring them. Not just the rectum and mm-hmm. just throw them in the bucket.
So you're a lazy person, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and till I broke both legs here. You know, I gained this one and broke, couldn't walk for a year, and that's how that happened. But I've lost 31 pounds so far. But and of course I lost the easy 31 pounds. Now it's tough. And these things, to enjoy yourself with a bunch of guys and have some cold beer, you know, since.
The way life ought to be.
Yeah, but you know, I still got to get rid of some more of this. So.
We're not going to go into the gut situation.
No.
Well, I do appreciate it, bro.
No problem.